A rich tradition. College Football Podcast is now live.
Hello and welcome to A Rich Tradition College Football Podcast. I'm Spencer Van Horn. He's Robbie Steltenpole. Two friends, one love, and that is college football. Roberto, how are you, my friend?
Dude, I am doing great. I really am.
Go ahead.
What'd you say?
No, my alarm went off that we always laugh about. And
oh.
So I was like, that's right on time.
Right on. I'm doing great, man. I don't think you knew this because we didn't really talk about it, but I had COVID last week. And
oh, nice.
Congratulations. Yeah, thanks. 3 years in a row in January, a couple of days within my birthday, I got COVID. Three straight years.
Oh, yeah, you had a birthday recently.
I did, last Monday. I turned 37.
The 16th.
That's right.
Look at you, big strapping man.
That's right. 37 years young.
37 years old.
But no, I doing really well. I like. How are you doing, Spence?
Yes, doing well. Work as well. Both of our basketball teams at VSU are doing well, and I do the broadcast for them. So, ladies,
the voice of the Blazers.
Yeah, the men are, I think the ladies have won 15 games and just got done with a 13-game winning streak. Just won by 51 last Thursday and won by 19 on Saturday. So, yeah, they're doing really well. There's some bumps and bruises and things like that to get over, but ultimately each team is doing really well. And VSU just added on the men's team another 1,000-point score to the program's history. So that was pretty cool to see for one of our players. And he got to do it at home on Hall of Fame weekend with another Hall of Famer 1,000-point score for the basketball team in the building as well. So it was pretty cool. And that guy who had just went into the Hall of Fame earlier in the day and is a 1,000-point score, his name is Butch. And Butch played one of those, you know how you go to a basketball game and there's little entertainment things at timeouts?
Mm-hmm.
We do some of those, and Butch got up to participate in a full court golf, mini golf thing, and he made it, and he won $5,000.
That's awesome.
On the same day he was going into the Hall of Fame.
Huh. That's really cool. That's
pretty wild.
Yeah, it is pretty wild. That's awesome.
So things are Spencer, good.
So Spencer, tonight we decided to do things a little different. We hadn't had a chance to reflect on the Natty National Championship. And so tonight, just like last year, we get to be straight up Georgia fans. Mm-hmm. We get to focus on just being a Georgia fan. We can be arrogant. We can, if we want, we can be confident. We can be whatever we want to be. Because for the second year in a row, our team did something that only like two or three other teams have ever done in the last 20 years, and that's win back-to-back championships.
Yeah, you know, one thing that really bugs me is, and this tends to happen sometimes, what I feel like are non-football people, not real football people who say that they're football people, but then they're not football people. Casual. You know, they show up and they're like, oh, you know, that championship game, oh, man, that wasn't all that fun. And, oh, man, that was a blowout. And, oh, man, that wasn't all that fun. And, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it wasn't all that entertaining. And maybe it's a low-scoring game and it wasn't entertaining. Or, you know, whatever it is. And you kind of get those people to identify themselves as just sort of what you might call a casual fan. Well, I felt like everybody was being super casual after the national championship game because everybody was like, oh, this is no good and this is no fun and that game's crap and DCU shouldn't have been here and blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. I had a ton of fun. I thought that was the most entertaining game of the year.
Amen.
I don't know. I just was confused by everybody's poor reaction to the national championship game. I had a blast.
Let me tell you, I'm right there with you, bud. Like, I had a great time. I don't know
why you guys didn't like it.
Yeah. I mean, TCU obviously deserved to be there. They earned their spot. They beat Michigan. If Michigan wanted to say that they would have done better, well, then you shouldn't have lost to TCU. And Ohio State, if you say, oh, you could have won that game too, well, you should have made a field goal. Like, I'm just saying.
Or protected your, what, 24 to 24-18 or 34-18 lead at
your double digit lead
7 minutes ago.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
You should
double digit lead in the fourth quarter.
Should have reserved that. Should have saved that. No. So this is what I'm talking about. I love you, Spencer. Like, I'm so glad that we're deciding to do this. But look, let's go back. Let's look at some statistics that I looked up today. It's not gonna be super long, but just some statistics I looked up about Georgia going into this season. Just are you ready for this, Spencer? Like, here's our Georgia football team going into week one. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right. So Georgia lost 15 guys to the draft, which we knew, 13 guys to the transfer portal. They took zero transfers in. They replaced their defensive coordinator, their DB coach, their O-line coach, and their wide receiver coach. Going
into turnover.
It is. And you and I remember saying this. I said it numerous times through in the offseason and throughout the regular season that because we had won the title, I didn't play. Because Georgia won the title, I expected I would have been happy with 10-2. Because of the schedule, because of the turnover and everything else. And so I went into the season like thinking, like, man, I'll be so excited to go 10-2, especially with how much we've lost and, you know, the schedule's kind of difficult, or, you know, at the time we thought the schedule was going to be kind of difficult. Spencer, like, what about you? Like, where were you kind of at? Because I just don't remember where your head was at. Where were you thinking, or what was your, like, what was your expectation for Georgia coming into the season?
Yeah, I think I was somewhere in the realm of just have your name in the hat at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we knew that the schedule wasn't intense. And at the beginning of the year, I think, you know, you had a sense that Tennessee was going to be good or that they should be good. I don't think we knew that they were going to be quite what they were. So I think I was very much on the side of let's go and have a good season. Let's be in the SEC championship game at the end of the year. There's no reason we should be losing to Florida. And there's no reason. And luckily ultimately we did have to beat out on Tennessee, but just in terms of the year prior, there wasn't anything overwhelming about anybody in the East. Win the East, get in the SEC championship game, which would then most likely be putting you in the national championship conversation, the playoff conversation. So I think I was there. So somewhere about what you were looking at, I could have been accepting of a couple of losses. It would have stunk because I'm sure, nobody likes to lose. But yeah, I think I was about in the same boat as you were. Just be there at the end of the year, be competing, be a part of the picture. Kind of like how the Braves did, you know, won a World Series and then came back and won 100 games and was in the playoffs and they were a part of the picture. So I think that's where I was for Georgia.
No, I think that's great. We try to be rational fans. We try to be objective. Some people get frustrated with me or annoyed by me because I am so critical at times of Georgia. But like, I really thought like 10-2 was rational. You know, there's people who are like, you know, hey man, like there's this and that. And I don't buy into the whole, like we were doubted. Like, I think that's just coach speak. Like, except for the day that we got to the Tennessee game and people picked Tennessee to win, outside of that, there was really no doubting of Georgia throughout the season. And like Athlon had them in the freaking playoff going into the preseason. You know, there were other people who had them picked to compete for the SEC. You know, yes. And, you know, yes, Bama was picked to win the SEC by, you know, SEC Media Days and by a lot to win it. But no one said, oh, Georgia's going to suck. Like, no one said that. And, you know, there's the stories about Saban back in 2011, 2012, having fake reports written about, you know, doubting Bama's team. I just think it's one of those kind of moves. I really do. Like, where are you at with that, too?
So, I got a chance to sit across from a coach after some rankings came out. It was basketball, and there were some, there were regional tournament brackets. And so, of course, everybody gets seeded 1 through 8 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And her team was seeded 7th. And she was telling me that she had gotten, like, physically angry and, like, really bothered by not just the fact that, you know, hey, you should have ranked us number one kind of thing. It was more of a, what more do we have to do to gain some respect? And I think that's where Dabo Swinney is coming from, or where Kirby, or where Nick, or where some of these head coaches will come from. Because for this coach, I'm able to see it a little bit more because I go to some of the practices and I'm there for a little bit of the grind. Not all of it, but a little bit. Yeah. And those coaches are there all through spring, and they're there all through, you know, the summer and individual workouts, and they're with the kids when they're up and when they're down and when they're going through all these things. And of course, this is a basketball coach that I'm talking about. So she's only got 15 players or however many. And so she's much more personal with every single person. So she knows how much they've been working and the grind of every single day and the injuries and this little things here and the little things there. And you as the coach understand so much better about what your team has been through, the sacrifices, the hard work, the blood, sweat, and tears, the minute by minute of all of that. Not just, hey, the summer just got done and, oh man, those guys were out there working. I drove by a couple of times and saw them out there working. No, you're in it. You're right there with them going step by step all the way. And I think when you're in that bubble, it's just that. It's a bubble, and then you get to talk about your circle, and it's just y'all, and it's y'all against the world. And the people who are being supported, they're almost in the bubble with you. You're not even worried about them. They're not a part of what is outside the bubble. Your support staff and even the people who are being supportive. So I think that's where some of that comes from, is it's a much more, almost if you want to call it selfish, kind of viewpoint of us versus the world. And that's on a really personal level, not just a mantra that you put on the back of your sweatshirt. It's a much more personal thing for these coaches and their teams, us against the world, because our world is just us. It's a very small world. And then it's us versus, you know, the bigger world and everybody else who doesn't know what all we've been through. And so it's easy to take disrespect, or it's easy to be disrespected, not easy, but it's more likely to feel disrespected because people who don't know what you've been through start telling you who you are. And that's bothersome to really competitive people. So I think that's where that, not that that's where that's come from and that's what you were asking, but that's how I view that stuff now, is
like,
from a very specific place.
Can I push back just a little bit? Because I think that's a great example. I just want to push back on the public acknowledgement that people doubted them. Like, behind closed doors in the gym, like in the locker room, I get it. But saying from the podium after you win the title that this person or that person didn't think you'd make it, or, you know, doubted you. Like, you know, who was it? One of the players mentioning, you know, y'all picked us to go 7-5, like that kind of notion. I think that's where I laugh, just because like no one did that, and I don't know anybody who consumes more college football content, preview content, than you and I. I did not get that vibe at all from anybody.
Yeah, and I think more to what I was referring to is all it takes is like one little thing, one little
that's
time.
Fair. No, that's fair. Yep,
and,
you're right.
And I think that's where that comes from, because for this specific coach that I'm talking about, It was just that ranking. We knew who we were. We were in the tournament. There was plenty of reason to say, whatever, it's not a big deal. But to her, it was this just unbelievable amount of disrespect to all of the work that they had put in throughout the whole season. And it was just that one ranking that really got her. And I think Kirby and the rest of the team will do it with, it was just that one time. It was just this one little clipping over here and this one little article over there and somebody being, you know, a smarty pants over there. That's all we're going to take. That's the us versus the world.
That's fair.
Those people disrespected us.
Let me ask you a question.
Pretended like they knew what we've been going through.
If you found out that Kirby had a fake article written to promote it, would you be surprised?
I would be surprised in the sense that I didn't know Kirby to do that. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised in the sense Jordan did it. So, you know, Jordan didn't write the fake article, but he had the thing about the guy for the Portland Trailblazers. So the idea is out there to make something up. So that wouldn't surprise me, but it would surprise me that Kirby did it because we just didn't know him as that guy. I don't know him as that guy.
Just because Saban's known to have done it early on in his coaching tenure, it just wouldn't surprise me.
Do we know that he did it, or is it a rumor?
Oh, no. Like, it...
Like, has it been confirmed?
Like, yes and no. Like, it's one of those, like, I've heard it mentioned by so many beat writers or people who would know. Like, I've heard it referenced by, you know, Braden Gall or Bud Elliott or, I mean, Andy Staples. Like, and I'm not even talking about this year. I've heard them mention it in years past. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and so, I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me, but you're right. Like, the character in which we see Kirby present himself by, like, it would be like, I didn't know he lied, you know, like, but just for the motivational factor, it just wouldn't surprise me. So, like, look, Spencer, let me ask you this big question, and then we'll try to start talking about some X's and O's or players over the year. What game was it where you realized, oh, crap, we truly have a national championship, like, possible team here?
So I don't have the schedule right in front of me, but I think probably Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And I know that I don't remember if that was earlier, if that was later in the year, but Tennessee might have been the real moment of like, okay, yep, there isn't going to be, or the likelihood of one of those slip ups is a little further out. And really and truly, some of the early handling of, well, you certainly had the handling of Oregon at the beginning of the year, which was a great step in the right direction in terms of, you know, hey, we're bouncing back really well from last year, but we weren't sure exactly about Oregon at that time. So it was taken with a grain of salt. Maybe the blowing up of South Carolina, the handling of Florida, if I remember right, or maybe 42-20. I'm not remembering that as, yeah. So, but I think Tennessee might have been the time where it was like, okay, this is different. Tennessee's got a different kind of offense. That's the kind of thing that Stetson's got to step up against. He didn't have to. The defense, you know, stomped that out all on their own. So maybe Tennessee would be the answer of like real, yep, okay. If we can stop that offense, anybody else in the country, especially at that point, Ohio State had its hiccups. Alabama was having its hiccups. There was no other offense in the country that was just overwhelmingly talented and good, like efficient, where you were like, oh boy, that's going to be big trouble. And Tennessee is the answer.
Yeah. I'll be honest. Tennessee's my answer too. Like it became like, at least at the Tennessee game, I knew we were making the playoff. Like, I knew we were making the playoff at the Tennessee game. I think the throttling of LSU is whenever I thought, okay, I don't know if there's anyone who can beat us. Like that was true. Like that, I think that was the evolution of the season for me. The Oregon game was like, okay, well, we may not like we should definitely go 10-2 on the season here, and then the Tennessee game's like, okay, we're making the playoff. And the LSU throttling was just like I don't know who can beat us. And, you know, you and I played we did play up Ohio State going into that Fiesta Bowl because I think that was the right call. Like, Ohio State almost beat Georgia, so we weren't off base, you know. But for me, I'll say this, like, well, actually, okay, I'm going to ask the question, but I'm going to answer it first this time. What is the, like, for the regular season, what is the play that will stick in your mind on the season? And I'll answer it first just to give you a second, because I didn't tell you I was going to ask you these questions. For me, it has to be Malachi Starks running down the running back against Missouri. Like, because if they score that touchdown, we do not win this. We do not win that game. Like, I almost would bet money we do not win that game. And for those that don't know, running back just shoots right up the gap for like he's about to run for like a 65 yard touchdown. Malachi Starks runs the freshman, runs him down, tackles him at the one or two yard line, and then Georgia has a goal line stand to hold them to a field goal, which keeps them in striking distance, and Georgia goes on to win by 4 on the road at Missouri. And again, like that's the play to me that's going to stick with me, like for years to come. What about you?
Yep. So, and it might not have been one of the touchdowns that was really crucial, or an early touchdown, but there was a really big scramble drill for Stetson in the backfield against Oregon. Oh, and he kind of stops and then throws to the corner of the end zone, I guess, to his left.
Funky. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And it's a touchdown. And you're kind of like, okay, it was a little bit of Houdini. There was a little bit of everything's just kind of going your way.
He's different.
That certainly like a play that sticks out.
I think you said it, like this Stetson Bennett looks different from last year after that game.
Yeah.
But keep going. I'm sorry.
No, I think that the interception of Keely Ringo in the end zone against Tennessee stands out as well, sort of along the lines of a similar play to what you're mentioning, kind of a stop, a play that's not necessarily a touchdown, but it was just another one of those. Here's Georgia really just taking it to this offense in a really major way. I think the freshmen's, you named him, Malachi Starks, had an interception in the Oregon game as well.
Oh, yeah, it was
that
beautiful.
Really sticks out.
Mm-hmm.
Where he makes a crazy over the head kind of play. So yeah, I think those would be the ones that pop to mind first and foremost from the regular season. Those are games that I kind of had to recap and not watch live. Ohio State has the most. I mean, that's the game of the year.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that
from
one
a game to game standpoint. Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. We'll get to individual in a minute, but throughout this season, you know, there was a lot of turnover at coaching, defensive coordinator, essentially linebacker and cornerback, DB coach, and the offensive line coach. Who do you think, like, of the coaches who were replaced, who's the one that you're going to be like, man, that guy really made a difference this year?
You mean this offseason or the new people coming in past season?
This past season.
Oh, boy.
And look, we don't really talk about those coaches a lot. So, like, I don't think
I've got an answer for that.
No, it's okay. I want to take a second and talk about the offensive line. The offensive line, you know, we got Matt Luke for a season or two. Actually, no, just season. Just one season. And then to change up to Searle, who had been an offensive line coach at Georgia before. And a lot of people were not very happy whenever they brought in Searle. I was just like hesitant, and I'm just like, hey, I'm going to trust Kirby. You know, because it just seemed like Kirby was just going to hire his best friends to coach everywhere. That offensive line gave up 9 sacks the entire season. The offensive line, I think, did have some issues creating holes, you know, big running holes. I think they did have trouble with gap scheme blocking at times, as opposed to the zone scheme blocking. But as the season went on, Searle molded and changed out and all this kind of stuff. And this offensive line, I think, in ways became a better offensive line than it was last year by the end of the year. And once again, did not win the Joe Moore Award. You know, that's a whole nother conversation, but I just had to give credence to the offensive line and how incredible they played this year. So, you know, I just kind of wanted to do some like recap on this, like Spencer, where, before we jump into the, you know, who you like, what players you know, you're going to remember most about the season and, you know, talk about the Ohio State and the TCU games, like where is Kirby at right now for you as far as like tier of coaches in college football? Because I was just going to say that this offseason you and I talked about ranking of coaches, and one of my critiques of why I had Dabo ahead of Kirby was because Dabo won one and then continued a winning culture. you know, and then went on to win another one, you know, a year later, you know, like a couple years after, yeah, literally 2 years later. Kirby to win one and then turn around, lose all the stuff that he lost, and then win again. Like, kind of where are you at, like, now with Kirby?
Yeah, no. Going back to back is, it's a big deal. Replacing all of that kind of talent, it's a big deal. You think about, you know, where Ed Orgeron and his staff were once all that talent from Joe Burrow in 19 exited to the NFL. They lost a ton of people, and it was kind of like, hey, you can't lose all that talent and then expect just to keep on chucking. And they didn't. They had a struggle year in 2020, which of course was the COVID year, so it was a little tight altogether, but nonetheless, it was you knew that they had lost a lot of talent.
Yeah.
And similar things happened with Georgia. I remember saying similar things. Hey, you can't lose all this talent and just expect just to keep on going. But they kept on going, and a lot of that's got to be on Kirby, because he keeps the machine oiled, like Nick Saban keeps the machine oiled. He kept it going, and he kept, you know, everybody going in lockstep, and I'm sure it helped a little bit having Stetson Bennett sort of still in a doubted mode, where he's winning a championship, but he had a nice year statistically, had a better year the first championship than he did the second year from certain statistic standpoints. And you go back over that and you think, you know, you got to contribute that to Kirby and his job, and mm-hmm. keeping the staff motivated, keeping the players motivated, all that stuff goes into it. And reloading, they took no players in the transfer portal.
Nope.
How crazy is that? So the recruiting plays through all that stuff. No, yeah, Kirby's tier one without a doubt. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Nick's still who's number one,
him?
And Kirby's,
I was gonna say, who's there with him?
Yeah, Nick's still number one. I don't buy into any of the slowing down.
Yeah, agreed.
Dead. None of that's on my radar at all for Nick Saban in Tuscaloosa. So it's Nick and Kirby. Dabo's right behind him, and then, you know, fourth can be, you know, a fight between Harbaugh and Day and Riley.
Brian Kelly,
yes, for sure. Brian Kelly maybe to the front of the line after turning around LSU in 1 year and getting wins over Bama and going to the SEC championship. So, yeah, Brian Kelly might be at the front of the list. But, yeah, Kirby's right there lockstep with Nick at the moment.
Yeah, I think right now it's Saban, Kirby, Dabo. And Dabo making the change at offensive coordinator, I think, is a bigger deal than people want to realize. And we'll talk more about that next week. We'll talk more about that next week. Spencer, speaking of Stetson Bennett, where does this guy rank for you as all-time dogs? Like, you know, you and I, we've talked about this so many times. Like, DJ Shockley is my favorite Georgia player of all time. I don't own a DJ Shockley jersey. I will be owning when it gets here, as I purchase one. I do have a Stetson Bennett jersey on the way.
Like, yeah, so for me, I went through and did a Mount Rushmore of Georgia, and it was Herschel, Stetson, and Champ Bailey were my three definites.
Yeah.
And there's probably a perfectly good argument for David Pollack, and you can go all the way back to Charlie Trippi or somebody else if you wanted to, I guess. But that might be my Mount Rushmore, and I don't think anybody can leave Herschel or Stetson off of their Georgia
100%, yeah.
Mount Rushmore. I think you can have whatever the other two are. That's your business. You can have whoever you want there. I got my two defensive guys and my two offensive guys. But I think with back-to-back national championships, you can't not have Stetson on your Mount Rushmore, just like you can't not have Herschel as the greatest running back in college football history, just edging out Bo Jackson. As mm-hmm. those are your two offensive guys. Whoever you want else is fine by me.
No, this is a fun exercise. I didn't know this was coming, and I like it. I would probably I completely agree with you. It's Herschel and Stet. David Pollack. Jeez Louise.
David's a three-time All-American.
Yeah, he's
him and Herschel, I think, are the only two that have done it at Georgia.
Yep, only two three-time All-Americans. It has to be Champ Bailey. Champ Bailey's the other answer. Because, like, I'm not the biggest fan of Stafford, of who he ended up being at Georgia, and having friends who graduated with him at Georgia and knowing kind of stuff that he was doing there instead of learning the playbook, learning girls' phone numbers, and learning how many keg stands he could do. Sean's not there up there. Like, I think probably the only running back, you know, actually, if I had a fifth, or if I had one to rotate with Champ, it would be probably Nick Chubb.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's hard. It's really easy at Georgia. Your running back is Herschel, because it has to be. Because if Herschel wasn't there, it'd be really ugly between Gurley and Chubb and Noshon. And heck, now right now for me, McIntosh is a part of that conversation. Mm-hmm. And Garrison Hurst and Terrell Davis and Musa Smith and all those guys, it would just be a slugfest. Herschel cleans it up because Herschel just says, "Nope, it's me, boys, and the rest of you can fight for number two." Sean's a favorite. The way that guy bounced up after plays and that stuff was great. And Nick and Chubb Gurley, those two were
Chubb is an injured season away from probably breaking all of Herschel's records. You know.
Yeah, I think you can say the same thing for Gurley.
Yeah, Gurley. The thing that holds Gurley back, like if we just look at talent alone, Gurley is obviously on there. But Gurley, regardless if the rule is stupid or not, he broke a rule, he was suspended for 4 games, and then he got hurt. Like, tore his ACL. You know, I have to take that into account. Like, I don't put Aaron Murray up there. I don't put Jake Fromm up there. I don't put Stafford up there. Like, those are not all-time greats to me. But you got to put Stet, like you said, you got to put Herschel. Yeah, I think I would put Nick Chubb, and then I would have David Pollack. That's a good question. So Spencer, like, just looking back at this season, you know, like what position group like really awed you this season, like surprised you, overperformed in your mind going into the season? Who was that? Who would that position group be?
So I think maybe just like, I'm just going to say the rushing attack. So, and not necessarily offensive line, but they're obviously an important part. But Georgia had this past season, Georgia went off and scored a butt ton of rushing touchdowns this year.
They did.
And they ran 44 rushing touchdowns on the season. 44 rushing touchdowns and allowed 7. The fact that you could hand it off to Brock Bowers.
Jesus.
The fact that you could hand it off to Brock Bowers. The fact that you could hand it off to, the other kid, 84, McConkey. The fact that you could hand it off to those two guys, you could give it to Edwards, you could give it to Milton, you could give it to McIntosh, and then, you know, Stetson could do the things that he could do on the ground as well. Stetson ended up with 10 rushing touchdowns on the season, and McIntosh with 10, and you had 7 for Edwards and 8 for Milton and 3 for Bowers and 2 more for Ladd McConkey, and just that aspect of the offense was really, really exciting this past year. And I think you probably give a lot of credit to, you know, probably the linebackers after exiting as much as they did. Cool. That linebacking crew continued to play at a really high level considering what all exit. But I'll stick with the rushing attack. But if position group specific, linebacker might have to be the answer.
No, I think that's really good. I think for me, I'm super impressed with the wide receiver group. And what I mean by that is, you know, you lose A.D. Mitchell. We knew George Pickens was gone. You had an ailing Arian Smith. But just somehow, some way, every freaking game, someone stepped up, you know, in the passing attack. And you know what? I'm going to cheat. I'm going to put Brock Bowers in that wide receiver group because He does line up at slot a lot.
Yeah, pass catchers for sure.
You know, just
the leading receiver on the team.
Yeah, just Rosemy, you know, McConkey, Kearse Jackson. You know, like Kearse Jackson is to me, you know, I don't cuss, as you know, but like a dang good dog, you know, that people want to say, like a DGD. Kearse Jackson is that to me, not because of numbers, not because of what he was able to do with the ball in his hands, but because he just did the dirty work all season long. And he blocked and he blocked. And when he got the screen play or he got the, oh my gosh, that play he had, you know, against Ohio State was so beautiful. Or Dylan Bell, the freshman coming in, like just how these pass catchers, you know, you lose A.D. Mitchell essentially for the year, you know, through the regular season, and you just still found a way to be productive. And Todd Monken, we've said this so many times, give that guy all the money, all the money, all the money. And I was super impressed by that this year. All right, Spencer, we'll try to start winding this down a little bit. Like, okay, so let's talk about the Ohio State game, because we already did kind of break it down, but let's kind of include this in the TCU game. This playoff, is this going to go down as a respected playoff to you?
Yeah, because I think you got two out of three entertaining games.
Yeah.
So yes, I think it was a fine playoff. Two out of three entertaining games. I think Georgia was going to be an overwhelming favorite no matter who came out of the other side. It might not have been as much as a favorite against Michigan, because I think people were a little more in tune to them supposed to be there, but people would have started factoring in, well, look what happened last year, you know, and it's only a year difference. How much different is this Michigan roster compared to Georgia's roster? So I think, yes, I think the answer is it was a fine playoff. You got two out of three games that were really good and competitive and entertaining. And that's all you can ask for, really and truly.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I thought, you know, we kept complaining about the playoff semifinals being blowouts. And then we had two really great games. And yeah, the Natty was, you know, a blowout. But I mean, I did not expect that. I know you did not expect that. Like, we expected to win. We picked them to win. We picked them to cover. We didn't expect this, 65-7.
Yeah, nobody expected 65-7. And I don't even think I picked them to cover. I think I thought, you know, I'll give TCU the cover. I'll let them have the, you know, they'll keep it close. I thought they were going to fight. They're going to be in it. You know, all those things. But I didn't even feel super confident in that. I think I tried to say, you know, and be respectful to TCU, but no, absolutely not. Nobody thought that this would happen. Even if people thought it would be Georgia by a lot, a lot's 42-10, yeah. Not 65-7.
So, you know, Setsubin has gotten a lot of praise, and he will continue. Like, I mean, I'm so glad he was my quarterback this season, and I'm so glad that you and I just continue to try to defend him, you know, at times over these past 2 years. But man, I got to tell you, I was so impressed with the defense in that TCU game. The defense just would not budge for TCU at all.
No. And you could tell that they weren't as ready to be there as Georgia was. Like, that a lot of people noted the very first play of the game, TCU gets a rollout to their right, and there's a receiver open on the sidelines with the Georgia player behind him, and Duggan overthrows him.
Yeah.
And it's an incomplete pass, and it's second at 10. And it's kind of like, okay, Georgia, tighten that up. You don't want that kind of play to happen again. But ultimately, I had overlooked the fact that, yeah, Georgia, you don't want that to happen. They just missed it there. Were they ever going to get it? Because they were just overwhelmed. I think they could see it in Georgia's eyes, and it was just a little bit too much for them. And yeah, you saw it from Jump Street there. Georgia was just ready to go. and TCU was overwhelmed at the beginning. Georgia felt the blood in the water and went after it.
And dude, their second string came in and in ways looked better than the first string did. Like, it was nuts, especially defensively. Like, they were just getting after it. And, you know, Kirby just refused to leave any doubt. And, you know, like, Spencer, like, let me ask you a question. Is there, talking about this to transition to next season a little bit, like, was there a team that didn't make the playoff that you would say could have beaten Georgia this year?
I'm sure if you put Georgia and Alabama on the field together, that Alabama would give them a run. That wouldn't surprise me, especially if it was a meaningful game. If you had given Alabama life there at the end of the year, Nick Saban life, then yeah, I think probably Alabama would have given them a run, for sure. Yeah. And I think you have to say Alabama as well because of the roster. I mean, if you're going to give Georgia so much credit for beating TCU the way that they did because the roster was just so much more overwhelming, well, then you have to look across the way and say Alabama's got a similar roster. That it might not have the same. They might not have all the talent that Georgia has this year, but they've got a similar roster.
Yeah.
And if you put those two teams on the field together, then you should have a pretty good ball game. So I think Alabama would have to be the answer, even though I agree their regular season was not good enough to earn them a spot in the final, you know, the final four.
No, I, you know what, man, I think you're right. I think that's the answer. You know, wrap my brain thinking, you know, hey, you know, what about Clemson? What about Notre Dame? What about USC? You know, like you can have, you know, these kind of like, you would have to have out-of-body experiences from certain players on these teams for it to be close, but I think Bama is the right answer. I think just because of who Bama is and who they've been for Georgia, regardless of what people think, regardless of the fact that Georgia beat the brakes off Tennessee, I still think it's going to be close. Like, I still think it's a close game. You know,
USC... go ahead.
No, that's all I got to say.
Yeah, I would say USC would be interesting. But you could very well see a USC-Georgia matchup looking very similar to the Ohio State and Georgia matchup, except I don't know if Ohio State or USC is getting stops against Georgia early.
No, that's fair.
And yeah. If they get some stops against Georgia, which, of course, they had interceptions this season, did USC. So if they pick that pass off that Ohio State picked off early and kind of gain a lead from there, you could very well see that game playing out very similar because TCU or Ohio State, I'm sorry, for the most part that night could not stop Georgia offensively, even though the Dogs had some trouble stopping them. Georgia found a way in the second half. I could see something similar playing out there. I'd be interested to see what Georgia and Tennessee would do in another matchup. Give, you know, with a healthy Hendon Hooker, give Tennessee another shot. I wouldn't be surprised if Tennessee came with a different, you know, a different kind of energy there, and maybe played differently in a rematch.
And a neutral field?
Yeah, neutral field, put a dome on it, you know, no rain, whatever cool. else it was that they complained about.
I think that would end up being Georgia's doomsday scenario. Like, I really do.
Yeah.
Playing them in a rematch on dome, covered dome, so, you know, neutral field. I'm not saying Tennessee definitely wins, but I definitely think the game is closer. And that would have been, but it would probably have been one of the highest scoring games of the season. Because mm-hmm. you know,
Tennessee's yeah, that's defense.
Go ahead.
That's the exciting thing about all this is there's nobody in the country that you felt like is going to stymie Georgia a whole lot on with their defense outside of Georgia doing it to themselves. I know Missouri and Kentucky. Yeah, I'm saying nobody's defense was going to be tough enough for Georgia, I don't think, especially at that point in the year. They had already had their stumbles with Missouri and Kentucky. I think that they were ready, especially you put it in a playoff, you put it on, you know, you put the stakes on the line, and Georgia shows up offensively, and I don't know if anybody in the country stopping Todd Monken and McConkey and Stetson.
No, I completely agree. I agree completely. All right, Spencer, who is, when you think back on this season outside of Stetson Bennett, who's the player you will remember? Who's the player you'll reference? Like, this player made this play. This player, like, kept us in the game. Whatever. What player are you thinking of?
Yeah, so it's really close for Ladd McConkey and his two-point conversion against Ohio State. Obviously, he had a really good championship game. Arian Smith in his shake, if you had to pick one play in the playoff, that touched 75-yard touchdown. And the context around it, you had just gotten a three and out. It was a quick score. It really helped close the gap and change that third quarter or fourth quarter, whatever. Whenever he got that play, yeah, fourth quarter, you know, that was really key moment. But I think overall, you leave Stetson Bennett out and maybe you leave Brock Bowers out as well. I think Kenny McIntosh, man, just he ended up with 500 yards receiving and he had 800 yards rushing.
A quiet 800 yards.
Yeah, and so that's 12 touchdowns on the season for him. And, you know, he was outside of tripping in that tripping on that one play against Ohio State. Felt like he did everything and more for Georgia this year as a receiver, as an all-purpose, literally all-purpose running back.
Yeah, no, I agree. For me, it's actually more defensive, and it's Smile Mundon.
I'm going to go with Smile.
The fact of who he had to replace, the two linebackers he had to replace in Nakobe Dean and Tay Crowder, you know, and what those two and Channing Tindall and what those guys meant for that, the leadership that they were in that linebacking core with these young guys and what they taught Smile Mundon, and coming into the season, like we knew Smile Mundon was going to be the starter. That was one of my concerns, was like, man, can he be the guy? And holy crap, was he the guy, you know? He was awesome. And he is a headhunter when it comes to the stopping the run. He reads defenses so incredibly well, or reads offenses so incredibly well. You know, I just was so impressed with him. I knew that if there was a stop that needed to be made in a short yardage position, like, I knew it was him. Like, I just knew it was going to be him. And Spencer, looking ahead, you know, Georgia is going to – we don't know how many players are going to lose. We know in the transfer portal they've already lost some players. None necessarily that would start were starters except for A.D. Mitchell, who's now gone to Texas. Georgia brings in Ra-Ra Thomas and Lovett, one from Missouri, one from Texas A&M. As of this recording, there's some interesting things going on with Ra-Ra, but the latest thing that I heard this evening as we're recording this is that these charges are probably going to get dropped on him, from him. So let's act like as if he is going to play. Where are you concerned, you know, replacing who's coming, you know, who's leaving, who's coming in? Like, what are you concerned about for next season right now, as I ask you in January?
Todd Monken.
Yeah, okay.
I think is the answer. I think if Todd returns, then you're in a really good space with Carson Beck as the quarterback. I know Kirby will be, you know, his usual, kind of uptight maybe about it, like he could get with Stetson. But I think Stetson was in the offense for 3 years, and it seemed like he got better and better, 4,000 yards, better and better as it went on. They trusted him more, 20 and a half passes per game in the first championship season, and 30 and a half or so in the second championship season, which is a great way to refer to these last 2 years, right? First championship and second championship. We'll do that for the rest of our lives.
We will.
Which year was that? Well, it was the first championship.
Championship
one there. Or I guess in that case, it would be, you know, like how they do with Star Wars in episode 1 or 4 and 5 and 6 or whatever we go episode.
Now you're talking my language. Yeah, football in Star Wars, man. What did I do to deserve this? Man, jeez.
Wow. So, yeah, I think Todd Monken would be the answer. Him, Carson Beck, 3 years together. a fourth year, fourth offseason as the man. That sounds good to me, especially considering Georgia's not huge on the transfer portal right now. You know, grabbing a couple of players here and there. With Carson Beck locked and loaded, there at least I have reason to believe we're set at the quarterback spot going forward, and hopefully that will be the case for Kirby.
Yeah, my concern is quarterback. You know, yes, I have a buddy who's associated with Georgia who I talk to regularly, and I told this to a friend yesterday, actually. My concern in the quarterback room is not believing whether or not Brock or Beck or Gunnar Stockton are talented enough. My concern is the fact that there were so many blowouts this year in Georgia's schedule, and we never saw Brock or Beck very often. The cleanup duty was always given to Stett, and he only threw like 8 passes all year in the fourth quarter in 8 games. Like in 8 games, he only threw 8 passes in the fourth quarter all year, not counting the playoffs. But and so like my concern is like if you truly believe Beck, Brock are, and I understand Gunnar was getting his redshirt, but like if you truly believe in Beck or Brock, why didn't they get more time to play? Yeah. And so I am concerned about that. Now, do I trust Monken and Kirby? Yes, I do. So whoever they put out there, I will buy in and I will trust, like, with no concern. But right now, January 24th, I am concerned. And the great thing is we have spring coming up in like 3 months, so we'll find out. So Spencer, a lot of talk has already been happening, and I get it. It's a fair critique. Georgia's schedule's doo-doo next year. They originally had Oklahoma scheduled. The SEC made them cancel that game. Tennessee and Texas both, Tennessee and Georgia both had to cancel their games against Oklahoma. And so, you know, when you look at this schedule, though, UT Martin, Ball State, UAB, Georgia Tech, those are the out-of-conference games. And then the two SEC West teams for the year is Auburn, as always, and then Ole Miss. Spencer, this is a really easy schedule. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, no, I mean, Georgia's going to be right there with another opportunity to go all the way. I think somebody said that, you know, of the 12 teams, 9 of them have, you know, 5 losses or something this year, this previous season. So it's like, yeah, I mean, you draw the I don't get bogged down in it too much because there's nothing we can do about it. There's nothing Georgia can do about it. And the length of a season's already really tough. I'm not as torn up about who you're playing and who you're not playing and that sort of thing. But yeah, no, Georgia has a chance. Don't overlook Ole Miss. Don't overlook what Auburn's going to do in year one under what's his name? Because you just saw some first-year coaches do some really impressive things, taking TCU to the national championship, taking USC to the conference championship. So, I mean, first-year coaches don't always have to be, you know, down in the dumps. I'm not saying Auburn will do that, but, you know, they could come through in shock and surprise and do some different things. So don't.
And the game's at Auburn.
So you don't want to count any of, the Wiccans, as you like to say. You don't want to count any of those people out. And Tennessee is going to be back. I know they got some questions on their end, but, you just don't overlook any of it. These are all still talented rosters that you're going to have to deal with. That might not be as talented as yours, but sometimes that doesn't matter. Any given Saturday.
All right. Well, Spencer, to end the show, I want to do something very irresponsible. Give me your 4-team playoff on January 24th. You can change it. We'll be able to change this as many times as we want, but your irresponsible 2024 playoff match. Give it to me.
Boy. Irresponsible. Okay, so I'm thinking, let's go with Clemson.
Okay.
Let's go with I don't know what Ohio State's going to do without C.J. Stroud. And I don't know, is Caleb Williams going back to USC? Do we know?
Yeah, he's got one more year.
Okay, so I'll say USC. Although Utah's not going to be easy because they just got done in by Utah.
And they go to, or yeah, Florida goes to Utah too this year. I'm just adding that in, or you weren't talking about that, but I just throw that in there.
Yeah. So those two teams, for real, it's going to be hard to leave Alabama out. Somebody from the SECs. You know what? It's irresponsible. LSU. And okay. There you go with your Brian Kelly love. You know what? Irresponsible. Well, no. Let's be alone. Is there somebody from the Big 12? I don't know if there's somebody from the Big 12 that will go back. Maybe Texas. Maybe.
That's probably the only team. But then we also thought TCU.
I was going to have fun and say FSU. Let's do FSU. Oh, let's do two ACC schools.
You jerk.
Two ACC schools.
That's literally mine. I literally was going to pick. Okay, I like that. Here are my four. I've got Clemson and FSU. I've got Georgia. And I've got Oregon.
So you are going to put Georgia in?
Yeah. Dude, I just don't see how I just don't see how you can't.
With that schedule, you're right.
Yeah, with that schedule. And, yeah, it gives them zero margin for error. But, like, I also don't know how good Bama's going to be. Like, Bama is replacing both offensive and defense coordinators. They are. Good. Yes, I agree with that. But we don't know who they're going to get.
A lot of talent, though.
Huh?
Cliff Kingsbury, baby. Cliff Kingsbury's coming to Tuscaloosa.
I think he's in Thailand right now. So, you know, we'll see. I know. You know, who's going to be their quarterback? Who's going to be their wide receivers outside of Jermaine Burton? Who, you know, they lose some of the
quarterback will be the big question. Go ahead.
They lose some of the O-line. They lose these DBs that they brought in. They lose their linebacking core. Like, there's just a lot of questions for Alabama. And look, you know, come April, once we see spring game, like, we could all change our tune. But right now, I think we're going to go 2 years in a row where Bama doesn't make the title or doesn't make the playoff. I don't even know if they make the SEC championship right now. Because, like, let me see real quick if I can be very, very fast about this, because I want us to get out of here. I want to look at Bama's schedule for next year. Oh, yeah, man. Like, Bama's out-of-conference schedule is Middle Tennessee State, Texas at home, at South Florida. Well, that's weird. They're going to South Florida. And then Chattanooga in November, the week before Auburn. But they still get Tennessee. They still get Tennessee. They get at Kentucky this year too, Spencer, which we have no idea what that's going to be. Like, I'm not saying who's going to beat them. I don't know what's going to happen there. I'm just saying, like, I believe that Nick Saban's the GOAT, but with the team that he's losing, the coaches he has to replace, let's see who he replaces between now and April, you know, on, you know, in their coaching positions. All right, Spence, that's all I got, man. This was fun. I enjoyed just kind of doing a reminiscent conversation about the season.
Well, I had one question for you, and so I'm gonna rewind us here real quick. At what point in the very early going of the national championship game were you like, okay, we're too much. They're overwhelmed. They're out of this. Was it some people, you know, talked about it on that very first play where, you know, that we described earlier. What moment was it for you where it was like, yeah, this is too much and we're overwhelming them?
Hold on. Because I thought about this, actually. I said this to somebody, actually. I gotta remember the play.
I can tell you mine. It was the two touchdowns right at the end of the first half where instead of going into halftime leading, you know, by a handful, we're leading by a video game number. At halftime of what, 38-7 or something?
Yes, it was the interception by Javon Bullard. That's whenever I knew. All right, we're going home early. Like we're about to beat the brakes off these dudes, and it's not going to be close. When they you know did the right thing, and you know, but Georgia pressed, called timeout, and pressed them on time, and you know you're like, okay, well, what is Kirby doing? And then and then they throw an interception, give Georgia the ball, and man, Stetson Bennett just throws a beautiful ball to A.D. Mitchell, who catches that one-handed grab like that. So for me, it was that. That's a great question too. But yeah, it was then the interception by Javon Bullard, who's just a sophomore.
Because I think you could have went into halftime with a certain score and said, "Don't want to count this team out. They've had comebacks all year long, all those things."
Mm-hmm.
And then those two big quick scores before the halftime, that was a big difference maker. There,
that's when
Georgia.
You're
let me. I'm gonna
go ahead.
Well, no, I was just gonna look and see what those were. Yeah, it was the Kendall Milton 1 yard run and then the touchdown to Mitchell that you described. So yeah, those two quick scores in all of, you know, zero time. It's 38-7 at halftime instead of 24-7.
Yeah, man. Well, that's all I got, man. This has been fun. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
You know, the rest of y'all are mid. Y'all aren't good. Georgia's undefeated.
who's winning the Super Bowl?
Oh man, I don't freaking know. I've watched like 8 games all year. I've watched the playoffs.
I guess we'll have an episode before the Super Bowl. You don't have to answer that. We'll have an episode before the Super Bowl.
Well, I was gonna say,
do a small little thing for the pros.
I'll say who I think is gonna be in the Super Bowl. I'll pick Joe Burrow, and who's the other team? Who's playing San Fran?
San Fran and Philadelphia.
I'll pick Joe Burrow versus Philly.
It's a Big 12 battle. Oklahoma mm-hmm. quarterback versus Iowa State quarterback.
Yeah, Jalen Hurts knows what it's like to already face Brock Purdy because he was there.
Yeah. Real quick, where do you subscribe on the whole who gets to claim Joe Burrow and which college gets to claim Joe Burrow and Jalen Hurts? Because apparently Ohio State's all about Joe Burrow. He is from Ohio, so they have a little bit of a claim. But also Alabama and Oklahoma seem to be doing this thing about he's an Alabama quarterback or he's an Oklahoma quarterback. Where do you subscribe on where Jalen Hurts is? Go ahead.
I'm actually very passionate about this. Jalen Hurts can only be claimed by Oklahoma. Alabama, you won an SEC title with him at quarterback, and then you let Tua still start. You subbed him out, and you put Tua back in, and you went on to play in the playoff with Tua. And then you let Jalen Hurts leave. So he is now an Oklahoma quarterback. Wasn't he a Heisman finalist at Oklahoma too?
I don't know about that.
Hold on.
I don't think he had that kind of a year. He had a good year.
Well, they went.
Yeah, it would have been 2020,
dude, yeah,
right?
Dude, yeah, he finished as runner up in 2019.
In 19?
20, uh-huh. Yeah. Dude, yeah. He finishes a Heisman. He finishes Heisman runner up. Yeah, he is Oklahoma. All that to say, he is owned by Oklahoma, or not owned, but he is claimed by Oklahoma. However, Joe Burrow is 100% LSU. He didn't even did he even start a game for Ohio State as quarterback?
No, I think you're right, and I think Ohio State's only real claim there is that he's from Ohio.
Yeah. Freaking LeBron's from freaking Ohio. That doesn't mean Ohio State gets to claim that LeBron's titles. Mm-hmm. Like, no, Joe Burrow goes with LSU. That's where I stand on that. What about you? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So I kind of, and I agree, Joe Burrow's at LSU because he won championship. And I kind of feel the same way about Hurts at Alabama. I feel like he can really and truly go either way, more going the Bama route because he won championships there. He came back in the game and helped them win the SEC, and he obviously led them to the point of being in the national championship game in 18. So, I mean, I think he's got gold rings at Alabama. I think Alabama can claim them all they want to. It's not Alabama fans necessarily. It's not their fault that he got benched. And, of course, he was playing poorly. Nobody sat there and said, hey, he's too good. He's playing well. Why are you taking him out of the game kind of thing? So I think Alabama certainly has a claim. He's got championships down there.
Maybe so. You're probably right. All right. It's time to get out of here. Since this is fun.
Yes, it was. It was. Two friends, one love, and that is college football. Be sure to catch, like, rate, review, and subscribe. SpiderDude64 on Twitter for Robbie. Spencer_Vanhorn, VanHorn. We'll catch you on the flip-flop. Later.